Thank you for tuning in to episode 19 of the Keto Matrix podcast. In episode 19, we have the pleasure of speaking to Meekan Grimm regarding her journey from vegan to vegetarian to carnivore. This is an absolutely awesome episode to just listen through some of the changes she's realized in the short time that she's made this change in her life. One thing that I want to say is this is the last episode before January 1st, and a ton of people are going to be making New Year's resolutions. I have committed to removing one thing out of my life for the month of January. I'll be honest, I haven't really decided yet what that one item is going to be, but pick something that you think you're addicted to, and I challenge you to not take it, whatever that may be. It could be something simple like testing your ketones, maybe something that you're a little bit more addicted to like coffee. Find something that you know will cause a hardship for you, self-imposed, and remove it from your lifestyle for the 30 days. See how you do with it. Journal through it. I encourage everyone to do that. And listen to Meekan as she kind of talks through what she'll be doing for the month of January in terms of eating only beef, water, and salt. Thank you guys so much for being the best part of the Keto Matrix. We appreciate it. Brittany and I would not be here without you. Listen, enjoy, and remember, if there's someone that you think this will resonate with, please share. There's a lot of great info in this episode specifically about the outlook children have, how those things are developed early in life, and how they impact us as adults, as well as, of course, the lovely things regarding eating disorders and challenges with changing our diet and those impacts. So thanks so much. Enjoy the episode.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com. Now, let's jump into our latest episode.
Brittany, good. I want to say afternoon because our guest is in the Western time, Pacific Standard, like loving life right now, but it's really evening. So let's say good evening. How are you?
Good day, mate. I'm going to just go with that.
Good day, mate. Wow.
I just got back from Australia a couple weeks ago, so that's why I can pull that one out there.
Okay.
Why don't you introduce our guest?
I don't want to introduce her yet because I'm still trying to, first off, let's just
wrap your head around know. Good day, mate.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking,
I know. I'm so mad I didn't use it in the last one, though. That was my first one back and I totally missed it.
I'm like, you didn't use it, and now 2 weeks later, you're like, oh yeah, well, I just got back. You don't even have your accent anymore. You had such a thick Aussie accent.
You're so full of it. Actually, I think I met more people from other countries than like native born Australians, because where I was staying in the hostels, like there was people from all over Europe and Asia, and so I actually talked to people with all different accents.
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I will say the country of California, where our guest is calling in from, it feels like another country. It does to me. I don't know why. I've been there several times and it feels like it's completely different, which is why all the natural light is shining in. But either way, we have the honor and the pleasure of having Meekan on. Meekan, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, now that you've listened to us ramble, I feel like you're in like Flynn. So anything after that goes. And I should have asked this before, but you know, since we're on, I feel like people are like, you know, they may think that I really take this really long, extensive period of time to figure out which guests come on. And for some of like the quote unquote industry experts, I will only have certain shows and select few. But when it comes to the everyday people aspect of the Keto Matrix, like, I mean, Meekan, you can tell the whole world. How much have we talked or communicated prior to today's call?
Like 3 or 4 emails, I think.
Maybe.
That was just to get like reconfirmed times. That wasn't even like actual discussion emails.
I was going
to
say, I don't even know if there were like full sentences comprised in more than one of them. So having said that, people are going to be like, I'm going to ask some idiotic questions right now. So thank you for helping me with the pronunciation of your first name before we started recording. Okay, cool. So having said that, you know, I looked through your Instagram feed and I've kind of peered into the fact that you're carnivore and have recognized the amazing health benefits of your diet change and all of those things. So before we jump into that, okay, I'd like to know and give the listeners a little bit more like your background, like who are you? Where did you grow up? How do you enjoy the communist country that is California? And a little bit of your background.
I was actually born in Northern California, San Francisco area, and then lived there till I was 6, moved to Kansas City, grew up in Kansas City and then moved out to LA when I was 19 and have been here ever since. So about 10 years.
Cool. So my first question is this. What's your favorite barbecue?
Probably Oklahoma Joe's.
Is Oklahoma Joe's in Kansas City?
It is.
I mean, talk about throwing people off the scent. I would never think in a million years. Why is Oklahoma Joe's in Kansas City? Shout out to Oklahoma Joe's.
Also that doesn't Oklahoma, make sense. But
oh, they just have a Kansas City place. Okay, cool. So
I think so.
I hope so. I really do. Otherwise, I'm opening.
It's really good.
Hands down, I'm opening up a Texas barbecue place in North Carolina if Oklahoma Joe's does not have a location in Oklahoma. Oh, man. Okay, so the listeners are in for a treat because I'm loopy, man. I'm so tired today. So if people are like, they're going to listen to this episode and be like, Neo was totally off his game. He was absolutely crazy. This is more like my everyday self anyway. So having said that, so Kansas City, back in Cali, now in the LA area, 10 years. I love it. So I'm going to ask, because I haven't been to San Francisco, did you have a love for Chinese food? Because I hear San Francisco's got like the best Chinese.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, I was really young, so I don't really remember, but we definitely had Chinese food, and I remember loving it.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. That's good stuff. Okay, so why did you move back to Cali?
I moved here for college.
Okay, where'd you go to school?
Yeah, so I went to FITM. It's a fashion school.
Very nice. How'd you get into fashion?
Well, in high school, my interest was art and fashion, and I just kind of combined them, and I ended up going to design school for fashion.
Man, that's so cool. I feel like, you know, I feel like there's certain things that, I don't want to sound sexist, but men and women have the tendency to have desires that, you know, like professionally growing up, right? Like, you know, you hear your boys that'll be like, oh, I want to be a cowboy or a police officer or a fireman or a race car driver or whatever, right? And it's more often than not where women will say, yeah, you know, I really have this passion for fashion. Now, let me just make this clear. There are plenty of men that are awesome in fashion and plenty of women that are great police officers, firemen, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just saying that it's one of those things where it's like, that's cool. That's kind of like the dream come true. Female growing up into fashion and art and then going to FITM. Like, that seems really, really cool. How did you get into fashion or why did you love fashion? How did that kind of come about?
I don't really know. I think it was just kind of a natural, it just kind of happened. In high school, I got really into it.
Very cool. Do you have a favorite designer?
Not really. I have like favorite seasons.
Okay, what's your favorite season? Do.
Well, it depends. It depends on what the designer is coming out with.
Okay. I like that. I know that. So like my wife and I are both originally from New York, right? So it's kind of hard to grow up in New York and not be into fashion in some way, shape or form. Having said that though, I know if I were to ask her, fall is without a doubt her favorite time of year seasonally, just based on the ability to kind of layer things in and work with whatever. So that's pretty cool. Having said that, though, I can only imagine loving fashion that you probably had this inward and outward expression of always viewing not only what you were wearing, but how you looked in what you were wearing. Mm-hmm. How did that worker impact or how did you kind of experience that?
Yeah, totally. That's definitely something that's been on my mind since I was a teenager. loving fashion and then just being a girl and having those body image always in your mind. And then when I got to LA, it became way more apparent that the industry standard is quite small and you feel that pressure all the time to look a certain way. So yeah, it's definitely something that has been on my mind for a long time and definitely affected my diet and consequently my health.
So how old do you think you were? I'm trying to think of like, and we've said it on some episodes before. I want to say that for me, it was probably like 13, 14 years old. But even like before then, my thought process of always looking skinny and being the tall, skinny, lanky kid was kind of like apparent. So where do you think, like, what age do you think you were when you started like really feeling the pressure of, you know, how you looked in the mirror and what you saw versus what everybody else saw?
Oh, gosh, it was young for sure. Maybe like 7 or 8 years old, because I remember around that age, I had like a belly.
Okay.
Like I was like a little child with like a big belly for some reason. And I remember being self-conscious about that at like really young, 7 or 8. So it's,
do you think your self-consciousness about that, was that something that like you noticed yourself, or was it something that you heard people comment on? Or like, I mean, because when like we think about it, 6 or 7, I have a niece that is that age, and like most of what I hear her say, I know is something that is repetition of something that she's heard. And it's actually something that I've tried to be a lot more aware of myself, just being around my nieces now so much in the last month. I'm like, oh, you probably need to watch what you're saying, like just passing down some of those thoughts.
Definitely, like kids absorb everything, and I think it was for sure things that I heard, things that I saw in the media, friends and family saying.
Man, it's such a, I feel like we could have an entire episode on just talking about that, because I feel like
too.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think it's crazy that we can be impacted, like you said, Meekan, so young, right? Like it's we absorb so much before we even realize what we're absorbing. So I mean, kind of unpack, like, when did you recognize it? I know now, like hindsight looking back, you're like, yeah, it was probably like 7 or 8, but when did you recognize it as an issue, and like how did you feel about it? What was your outward thought process about it all?
I mean, I have those early memories of being like self-conscious about my belly, but it you know, as a kid it kind of goes away and you're worried about other things. But it probably became like a really prominent part of my conscious mind when I was maybe middle school, around 13 years old. And then when my body probably started to develop around puberty, and I started to get hips and thighs and cellulite and things like that. And that's when it really became like an obsession.
Okay, cool. So I try, and I could say Brittany and my wife do a very good job of trying to pull out the simplistic without me getting overly complicated and long-winded. But I really do hope that, you know, the episodes recorded here on the Keto Matrix podcast, people feel comfortable sharing with others. And so if there was a 13-year-old girl listening right now, what would you want to tell her?
I'd want to tell her that she is beautiful and that she should be worried about her health and not what she looks like, and that in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to matter what she looks like. It's only going to matter what she does. And also that as a teenager, especially, you have a lot of anxiety and you have a lot of hormones raging and emotions, and a lot of it is exaggerated. And in 10 years, even, you're not going to feel that way. It gets better.
Yeah. You're saying that, and I love it, but I'm also thinking, is it really as a teenager, or is it like your entire life? I feel like my mind exaggerates everything, no matter good or bad. It's like, it's never as bad as it is and never as good as it is. Like either way. Right? Like,
I mean, there is a certain truth to that. Like, it's always that hindsight's 20/20, and in the moment, like, you still experience the emotions, and whether it's anxiety or what, like, there's always going to be emotions that are tied into what you're experiencing at that time. But I think as you get older, you learn to recognize that tomorrow, like, I just need to get through this, and tomorrow when I look back on this, it's not going to seem like as big a deal. As a teenager, you can only really see that minute that you're in, at the, like, that ability to really look into the future and recognize, hey, I know I feel like my world is crumbling right now, but it's not, like, it's really not ending. Sometimes as adults, we do better with that than others.
Yeah.
Not going to mention any names, Neo.
Or worse,
I'm just
right?
Teasing.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'm good with it. I mean,
we give you a hard time, but you do a pretty good job of reeling yourself back in after a few minutes.
I try anyway. But in saying all of that, right, like, again, we could have an entire episode on that, and maybe we should. But so in looking at and realizing, like, okay, cool, you need to focus on like your health and not stress out or allow the anxiety to build in our minds regarding what we may see or what we may think. How did that kind of play out for you? I mean, how did that impact you, like, in your everyday and your eating habits and those things? Like, obviously you're in love with fashion, you're feeling some type of way about like your body image, you're going through the same things that the majority of, you know, teenagers everywhere go through as far as looking at themselves and trying to fit in and all that kind of stuff. How did that play out for you?
Well, it's been a long journey for sure. when I was a teenager and I developed these body image issues, I definitely had, like, I didn't eat the best diet growing up. My mom has always been health conscious. So, like, she was on, you know, the low fat whole grains bandwagon. Yeah. So I ate a lot of, like, you know, vegetables topped with, like, margarine and, like, ooh, whole yummy grain rice and yeah, whole grain pasta. And I ended up developing, like, almost like a binge eating disorder, I remember. And it was driven by, like, not just my body image issues, but also just anxiety in general. I realized I would binge anytime I felt anxious. And then I would feel guilty, of course, and try to restrict. And it was just this really harmful cycle. It took me a long time to get out of that, actually. I think it continued into, like, my early 20s. And I think a huge driving force also in the binging was I ate such a high carbohydrate diet, and it caused a lot of, you know, cravings and just wanting more. Lots of sugar, lots of carbs, lots of pasta. Like, pasta was, like, my jam. I would eat it, like, seriously every night for dinner if I could.
I know that you can't tell, but I tell everyone, and Brittany can vouch for the fact that she's had the world's best lasagna, and I made it because I am, seriously, for those that can't see me, the only black Italian that they probably know. So I'm with you on all the carbs and all the pasta and yeah. Oh man. So I feel you on that one. You know, it's also crazy how hyper palatable, like, carbs and sugar really are, like, in general. I feel like just the mechanism of knowing when we're full is totally thrown off because we can just continue eating so much of it because it tastes that good. So, I mean, I get it. So you're going through all these things, you're eating all these extra things. Did you have a favorite meal?
Spaghetti.
Just spaghetti and meatballs? Hands down. Spaghetti with, like, meat sauce.
Yeah, for sure.
Garlic bread? No garlic bread.
Oh, yes, garlic bread with cheese on top.
I was going to say, with cheese or without? Because, yeah.
With garlic bread with cheese. Always.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, she's starting to the... She had the meat and cheese down. She just had to get rid of the rest of it.
Right.
Right.
She was on the process early on.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, so continue. I'm sorry for the interruption.
No worries. Anyway, so when I was about 17 or 18, I think I was 18, I decided to go vegan because all my friends were doing it. And I thought, like, I was my driving reason for going vegan was I was hoping I would lose weight. And I did at first, but because I did, I actually went really strict, like, right out the gate. I decided I was going to be macrobiotic vegan. And so I did that for
what
a
is
month.
Macrobiotic
vegan.
Yeah, oh, it's like this really intense form of veganism. It's basically like a whole foods vegan diet. It's like focuses on whole grains, vegetables, like healthy oils, even like olive oil and coconut oil, sesame oil. So I was like only eating that, like not the vegan, like, processed stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, like, tofu, I'm assuming, was out.
No, tofu was part of it.
Okay, so how long did you do that for? I'm just thinking, I would never in a million years touch tofu.
I did it for 30 days. I did the macrobiotic part for 30 days. And I actually felt great, like, because I'd gone from, like, standard American diet to eating, like, mostly vegetables and, like, brown rice. And I lost some weight and I was feeling good, but it just wasn't sustainable.
Wasn't sustainable, why? Because the flavor was just not there.
There are like rules for macrobiotics. There's like rules you have to follow in like food preparation, and it takes a really long time. Like, you can't just buy like minute rice and like whole grain minute rice. You have to buy like the actual whole grains and like soak them and then cook them for a long time. And like beans, you have to buy them and soak them and cook them. And it was
to break down the starches and what have you. Okay.
Right.
So like a paleolithic then vegan version, I guess, would be like the easiest, most simplistic elementary way.
Yeah,
I'm trying to make it Crayola clear in my mind. I'm thinking, I'm like, I don't, you know, just the whole, as soon as people say vegan, my brain starts doing crazy things like, what are they talking about? Why?
Yeah, but Yeah, and I was like, okay, I feel good, and I guess it's because I'm vegan, so I'm just gonna like keep doing the vegan thing and try to eat as healthy as I can. So I did that for about 9 months. I wasn't macrobiotic. I wasn't like being super strict anymore, but I was still eating pretty healthy vegan. And then after 9 months, I think I moved to LA during this time, and I ended up adding back eggs and dairy at some point. And I remember when I moved to LA, I think maybe the reason was I had really, really bad like chronic fatigue.
Okay.
And like I could not, I would sleep through like really important things, and I would get like 12 hours a night and still be tired all day long, and drinking coffee all day and still be tired. And it was just, it was really bad. And so I ended up being like vegetarian for 2 years.
Okay, so vegan 9 months. The nine yeah. months, does that include the macro aspect of it?
Yeah.
Okay, so 9 months. And then 2 years vegetarian.
Yeah.
And the chronic fatigue, I can't remember the last time I had 12 hours of sleep. So you had 12 hours of sleep, you'd have the entire day filled with coffee, and you were still tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really bad.
Oof. Okay.
Yeah, I felt like a walking zombie. And okay. Also some of my, like, I started to get some digestive issues during this time too.
Okay.
Like right when I moved to LA and I was still vegetarian and everything.
Man. And so I'm assuming you just had like all the acai bowls, right? Because like California's got those things everywhere.
Yeah, those are everywhere. Every corner. Yeah. Smoothies. Yeah.
So continue. When did you decide, after the digestive issues, after the, did you lose a ton of weight when you were vegetarian for 2 years? Like, how did that work?
No. So I lost like, initially I lost like 10 pounds when I went vegan, and I gained it all back, and then more probably.
Okay. Okay.
So the acai bowls.
Yeah. Like bread and hummus was a staple of my diet. So
nice. Inflammation yeah. packed with inflammation right. with a side of carbs. Got it.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're Kansas City. She leaves like one of the barbecue capitals of the country. You move mm-hmm. to LA, you eat all the acai bowls, and you're feeling miserable and super tired. What's mm-hmm. I've got to ask this question. You said you slept through some pretty important events. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the most important event you slept through?
I slept through my boyfriend's graduation from college.
Oh.
Are you still dating that individual now?
No.
I think I knew the answer to that one.
I mean, that's not why, but yeah, that was pretty bad. And I didn't even remember doing it either.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm laughing so hard right now. That's hilarious.
It was pretty
okay.
bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So where do you go from there? I mean, when did you, digestive issues, upset? How was your body image feeling that time? Like mentally, where were you at?
Oh, not great. I was depressed during this time too. And my anxiety was really bad. And part of it, I mean, I just moved to a new city and there was like culture shock, and I was, you know, missing my friends and things like that. So that definitely contributed. But I just remember being just miserably depressed some days for really no reason. And of course, my body image has just always been in the back of my head for, you know, since I was 13 or whatever. Or so that was always present. Especially working in fashion and going to college and being surrounded by all these girls who want to be in fashion. It's not great.
I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So where did you go from there? When did you decide maybe this whole vegetarian thing isn't what you're for? When did you decide barbecue is maybe a better option?
I don't really remember. I didn't ever really make the connection between my diet and how I was feeling when I was a vegetarian. I ended up eating meat again. I think it was just willpower, you know, after 2 years of not eating meat. I think it was actually on Thanksgiving I decided to eat turkey. I decided I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to eat some turkey. And then from then on, I just started eating meat again.
It's the one huge time I recommend every vegan and vegetarian out there cheat on Thanksgiving or Christmas or any one of the rest of these holidays and eat meat. So was it fried turkey, roasted turkey, and was it good?
Roasted turkey. It was amazing. Yeah, it was incredible.
She kept eating meat after, yeah. So it couldn't have been bad. Otherwise, she would have been like, nope, there was a reason I've done this for 2 years.
Yes. She was comparing it to hummus and bread. So
You'd be amazed at how many people still are like, yeah, nope, can't do it. Mm.
It's okay. All right. So you had a cheat and you ate turkey. How did that make you feel?
It felt great. I felt like I had more energy. My energy did start to come back. My chronic fatigue went away when I started eating more meat again. I remember the first time I had like a burger after I started eating meat again. It was like my life force was restored.
You know, you say all this, right? And I mean, I know it to be true, but I think of how many vegans and vegetarians that I know, or those that, you know, have the majority of their diet based in vegetables. And I know they're not getting enough meat and animal sourced micronutrients at all. And I mean, like, even today, there's someone that had decided they'd go vegan, no, vegetarian, and they just look sickly. And I feel so bad because you would think that you were cursing them out when you're like, hey, you should probably try eating some meat. But it's bad. I mean, I feel like you can notice the chronic fatigue and you notice their lack of nutrients and their balance and all the other things that come along with that.
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot of friends who are still vegan and on that bandwagon, and I see them and I notice their health problems, and I'm like, I know exactly why you're having these health problems, but you can't, like, I can't say anything because I know they're not going to listen to me.
See, I just want to say shout out to every carnivorous eater out there that we will have the conversation. But unfortunately, there are so many vegans and vegetarians that are like cult-like, and they, if you ask or even talk about eating meat, they want to just stab you in the eye with a fork, which is unfortunate. So, okay, cool. So, Brittany, this was where you were supposed to tell me. Snap. Like,
I was debating on exactly how I was going to do it. I was like, he's maybe going to reel himself back in and stop making such large generalizations. I'm not, I don't disagree with anything that you guys said about how many, like, there are a good number of people who are vegan and vegetarian and still have a lot of health issues. However, there are some who do not have the health issues. They continue to do really well in the fitness world. Now, could the argument be made that they could do better if they went keto? Absolutely. But we're not going to have that argument today. I'm just going to throw that out there so we don't alienate everybody and no eyeballs are stabbed, because to your point, some of them do get a little cranky.
So,
but to be fair, so do you when someone tries to give you a vegetable.
What I will say is this, because I am embracing Neo completely, anyone that would like to throw shots out, I will, without having to dodge them, not be hit by these bullets.
Oh my gosh. Okay, you really are getting reeled in. All right.
For no one that knows that, watch the movie The Matrix. But you know, at the end of the day, I feel like, yes, obviously there are some people that do better than others, but I still feel in the depths of my heart that anyone that is only eating vegetables, they may feel good for a period of time, but at the end of the day, they are going to, without a doubt, start to feel horrible because they're not going to be able to extract the micronutrients out that they think they can. And they won't be able to because we're just not set up that way. And I don't have gray area in that, like, at all. I don't. And I won't allow it.
That's why I said, if anybody tries to offer you vegetables, you bring out your fork for stabbing eyeballs. But back to Meekin's story.
Yeah, yes. But I will say, for those of you that cannot see Meekin, she's shaking her head yes. The entire time. And that's only because she's a guest on the podcast and she's like, well, I don't want to not agree.
Well, no, she also has lived it. For her, it was definitely, it sounds like a really rough experience, like, to be living that way. And she felt significantly better when she reintroduced meat. And then obviously I would assume, based off of having checked out your Instagram, since having gone more the carnivore route, has felt even better. So why don't you tell us about kind of what led into that route?
Yeah, so it's been like a long thing coming, getting to carnivore, because I started having symptoms, like really bad digestive symptoms, probably 5 or 6 years ago, around there. I'd say it started around when I was a vegetarian, but it was like not enough for me to be like, oh, this is an issue. I was just like, oh, it's just like, you know, occasional indigestion, everybody has that, whatever. About 5 or 6 years ago, it took a turn for the worst. And it was like every day I was in pain and I was like, what's going on? Like, I need to figure out like how to fix this. And I was raised to think about nutrition and diet. So that was kind of the first thing I did turn to. And that's when I kind of got really into like being paleo, because I was researching like digestive health and all these things. And I started to research, you know, find out about how fat is really good for your digestive health and eating meat and bone broth and all of these things. And I started to incorporate that. But I also believed at the same time, like, oh, you need fiber, right? Like, you need fiber for digestive health. Yes,
absolutely. Fiber is important. Like, just devil's advocate.
That's definitely from the devil.
Well, I was always on that bandwagon, always. Like, sweet potatoes, greens. I used to have a rule that I would not eat a meal without something green in it. And I was very adherent to that rule for a long time. And so I ate my vegetables. I ate lots of vegetables, you know, butter on them, grass-fed butter on them, bone broth, you know, things like that. And I just wasn't getting better. Like, nothing I did was helping. And I was like, what's going on? Like I'm trying, like, nothing's helping. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing everything I'm reading about. Like, I'm strict paleo, all of this. Nothing was helping. So I just kept researching, and it took me, you know, I went through like various different iterations of like digestive health diets. Like, I did the GAPS diet. I did like the anti-candida diet. I did like all these different things, like various low carb versions of paleo, but always with lots of fiber. And
can you, before we go through that, because I really want people to understand where you're coming from with this, right? How did mm-hmm. you feel? Like, I know you said you had like digestive upset and indigestion and those kind of things, but I mean, how did you actually feel? Because I think one of the biggest things that for me, clients don't realize like what bloat feels like, or what inflammation in their joints and bones and their intestines feel like. Like, what, how did you actually feel? Like, what were the symptoms of the issues that you were having that you recognized as such?
Well, I felt terrible. I felt sick all the time. I used to have to stay home from work like a couple days a month because I had really, really bad like abdominal cramping, and I couldn't go to the bathroom.
Okay.
And
okay.
when I did go to the bathroom, it was only partial, and I would still feel bloated and I would still have cramps.
Even with all that fiber.
I also had, you know, anxiety and depression has been a struggle for me since I was a teenager. And then in the last couple of years, I started to develop some really, really bad skin problems. Okay. And this is while I've been like mostly paleo. So I started to develop really bad rosacea. I used to have acne literally all over my body, like from my head to my toes. I was covered in acne. I started to get hives and like itchy rashes after eating certain things. I gained about 20 pounds over my like maintenance weight, I guess. And it would not come off no matter how much calorie counting or exercise I did. So I felt pretty bad.
Okay. So I'm assuming, and I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but so you feel horrible, and you know, you said your mom was kind of into health. And so you had the thought process to say, well, it's gotta be like my health and nutrition. So where did you spiral from there? Cause I know for me, like, and Brittany knows, I'm all about like, I was crushing it. I bought a Vitamix and I'm eating all the greens. I'm working out twice a day. And similar mm-hmm. to what you've said, like none of it was helping. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, where did you go from it? Did you start doing ridiculous things with your diet? Did you start working out 24/7? Like, how did those things, like what occurred?
All of the above. Yes. I've done like all kinds of crazy things with my diet. Something that I didn't really mention was in my early 20s, like around the same time I started to develop these IBS symptoms, I was also on this craze of working out like 2 hours a day, five times a week, and eating only 1,200 calories a day.
Okay, whoa. 1,200 calories a day, 2 hour mm-hmm. workouts, 5 days a week.
Yes.
Were you, okay, so when you say workout, were you like lifting weights? Were you just running? Were you?
I was lifting weights and doing cardio. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And to what avail? How did that work out?
I mean, it was like, I felt great about it because I looked good, but I was starving all the time, obviously.
How long did you do
can't
that
imagine.
For? Yeah, I'm like,
I'm getting hungry just thinking about it for you.
My inner fat kid is screaming right now.
A few months. I did it for a few months. And I would go on and off with it, you know, because obviously you get to a point where you're starving and you just have to eat.
Yeah.
And then I would gain weight and I'd be like, oh, I need to do that again. So I was like in this cycle.
Okay. Do you feel like that led to eating disorders? Did you look at it as an eating disorder at that time? Like, how was that? Like, because I feel like for people that are super restrictive and then work out a ton and then, you know, kind of binge because they're like, oh my goodness, I haven't had XYZ in forever. Like, that probably adds to anxiety too, or at least I know it would for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was just another iteration of my binge eating disorder that I developed as a teenager.
Man, okay. So I'm sorry, I keep cutting off. So 1200 calories, two hour a day workouts, and you are still looking at like your health and nutrition aspect of things. You're still working out and crushing it. Kind of walk me through like when you got to the point where you were like, hey, okay, I've looked at the food. I've started incorporating more fats. You were still taking like this paleolithic approach. When did you start getting entertained by reducing the amount of fiber?
Right before I went carnivore. So I was doing, like, I had had enough for like the umpteenth time. And I was like, I'm going to do a really healing diet. I was doing the GAPS diet for like the fifth time. And I don't know if you know what the GAPS diet is, but it's basically just like bone broth with like cooked meat and vegetables. And you have to cook it for a really long time so it's easy to digest. And it's supposed to heal your gut and, you know, all of that over time. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I guess that was pretty low carb because I was literally just eating soup with like meat and like a few vegetables in it for about a month. But I was still having bloating and issues.
Okay.
Even with that. And then I found Michaela Peterson and her like carnivore diet, and I read about her story and I was like, that's insane. Like, nobody can just eat meat and nothing else. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, you need vegetables, right? You need fiber, all of that. And I was like, I could never do that. That's crazy. But at the same time, I was on this super like restricted diet, doing everything that they say that you're supposed to do to try and heal your gut and everything. And it wasn't working. I wasn't feeling better. So finally I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to try it for 30 days and I'm just going to see what happens. Like, 30 days won't kill me, you know?
I mean, you did the macrobiotic vegan and survived. So I feel like after that, anything could be done.
Exactly.
Seriously. Like, so, let's say that again.
So that was like 6 months ago.
All right. So you've been carnivore now officially for 6 months.
Yeah.
I love it. So going back.
So what happened at like day 30, or at what point did you like hit that point where you're like, okay, this is going to be longer than 30 days, or I think I could do this longer, or like, what did that look like for you?
Immediately, like within 3 days, all of my digestive issues were gone. Like, all of my uncomfortable bloat was gone. It took a while for like my bowel movements to regulate, but like I had no cramping. I had no uncomfortableness. I felt like so empty and light, and I had not felt like that in years. And within about a week or two, I lost like 10 pounds. And a lot of that is water weight that comes off initially when you give up carbs. But I could tell that my inflammation was going down. I wasn't itchy. My skin wasn't itchy all over like it used to be. And I had energy. I had tons of energy. And the best thing about being carnivore is the mood regulation. Like, I feel like randomly euphoric for no reason at all throughout the day. And like, for someone who suffered from anxiety and depression for years, that's like amazing. There's nothing better.
I concur. Yeah, I mean, like, that's awesome. So I guess my thing is, let's backtrack a little bit. All right, so 6 months ago, we start the process now, and you were pretty low carb though before that, though, because if you were doing the GAPS diet, like, you still weren't eating a whole lot of carbs, but you still saw a 10 pound weight loss, even in the reduction of that, you know, like taking those small amount of vegetables out. And so you're now in it. First couple of days, you feel things change. First couple of weeks, you realize you've lost weight, your inflammation's gone down. When did you kind of notice the change in your skin and your mood?
Probably a few weeks. So I like the acne on my body went away within a few weeks. I still have rosacea and I'm still figuring that out. And I actually just gave up coffee. I had been drinking coffee the last 6 months still. And I'm thinking it might be the missing link when it comes to my rosacea. Let's hope. But it's a lot better than it used to be, for sure.
Where do you think you are on a scale of 1 to 10 as far as being addicted to coffee?
Oh God, 15.
Okay, and how long have you gone without the coffee now? Like, when did you kick it off? Yesterday?
About a week ago, actually.
Congratulations for 7 days sober. That's fantastic. I say that. I was just having a conversation with someone. See, this is an emergency. When people give up coffee, you hear sirens. Like, it's but I think I just was having a conversation with someone. I was like, yeah, you need to cut back on your coffee intake just because of the cortisol and the metabolic impact that caffeine and coffee has, especially when you're drinking like 4 or 5 cups a day. But with anything really, right? Like, if you're absolutely addicted to it and you feel like you can't let it go, you should let it go just because it shouldn't have that kind of power over you. So seriously, like, congratulations on not drinking coffee. How has it been the first week? Because I know somebody heard that and they're like, oh, there's no way I'm giving up coffee. And I'm like, well, calm down. You won't die. And hey, listen, Meekin, you didn't sleep through the time for us to record. And so that's a win, right?
Yeah, I have been more tired than I normally am, for sure. Being carnivore, though, helps with that so much. Like, being carnivore in general seems to help with any withdrawal symptoms, because I had a headache once, and that was it. Like, I had a headache the first day. I gave it up.
Cool.
And then I didn't have any more.
How much coffee were you drinking?
I was drinking only about 1 or 2 cups a day. Okay. When I realized, I used to be so addicted to coffee. Like, I used to get Starbucks like 3 times a day when I was in college and stuff. And I ended up reducing it to 1 cup a day. And I would brew it at home and buy organic coffee and do all of that. When I realized that, you know, my digestion needed to heal and all of that. So, yeah, only about 1 or 2 cups a day. So it wasn't too bad.
Cool. I haven't tried it yet, but, I don't even know if you've listened to it yet, cause it just came out, but Healthy with Nicole Carter was on, and she mentioned that she ditched coffee and that was one of the missing links for her. She now drinks, Herba Mate tea as like the ritual replacement. And so I haven't done it yet. I'm probably going to in January. I've given up coffee before. It's definitely one of those things where I can without a doubt go a day without having coffee or 2 or 3 or what have you. But in January, I'm going to make it a point. And so for everyone that's listening to this now at the end of December, this is coming up. But in January, I'm going to make it a point for a group of us to all give up not only coffee, but one thing that we feel we're addicted to. I don't care what it is. Maybe it's fat bombs. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's sweeteners in your coffee, whatever. But to completely give it up for the month of January and, you know, allow your body to heal from that substance, even if it's just mentally. So we will see. It could be something positive, like, oh, I have to test my ketones every day. Go the month without, you know, like whatever the thing is that you feel like you have to do. Because I feel like there's too many things, like negative or positive, that we associate and it creates an addiction that really shouldn't be there. So either way, fantastic. Do you test at all right now? Are you tracking? Do you test ketones? Do you look at or do any of those things?
No, I've never tested my ketones. I don't even really know how to do it.
Yes, love it. Okay.
I could tell in the beginning when I went carnivore, I could tell I was in ketosis just because I had like the keto breath.
Okay. And for everyone listening, if all of a sudden you decide you're going to go low carb into a ketogenic state and your significant other or just people you work with, talk with, don't want to talk to you, check your breath. That could be it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, really. It was like really bad for like a month, but then it went away.
Very cool.
I tracked my calories and my macros for like a week just because I was curious.
Okay.
One. And I tend to eat somewhere in like the 70 to 30 ratio fat to protein, and calories are kind of all over the place because it really just depends on my hunger that day. Like, I've had days where I've eaten probably up to 3,000 calories, days where I've eaten maybe 1,500. I don't know. Just depends.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Have you tracked, like, so do you still kind of keep in mind, like, I had 2 pounds of meat today, a pound of meat today, or anything like that?
No, not at all.
So you literally don't track anything. You just eat whatever's, you're hungry, I eat.
Yeah. It's pretty important to me to listen to my body, because I just feel like that's how you're going to heal yourself. Your body's going to tell you what it needs. And you have to listen to it. Cause my goal with this really, like I had body image issues for years. And I think that that's kind of what got me into this mess, was trying to tinker with my diet too much and control the amount that I was eating, instead of just listening to my body and what it wanted. And so my focus has just shifted to my health and getting healthy and doing whatever I can to heal my body and be optimum. And I know that my body's going to tell me what it wants. So I'm going to listen to it.
I like it. How strict? I'm sorry. Some of these questions I know I'm asking you, and I'm thinking to myself, people that are listening to this as the devil's advocate, as the naysayer. So you made the comment, you listen to your body and you want to give your body what it wants, right? Which I think is absolutely awesome. But what do you say to that person that wants a cupcake day three of this carnivore change?
Yeah, well, I would say that's not your body telling you what it wants. It's the carb addiction telling you what it wants.
Great answer. Johnny, tell her what she's won. man.
Carbohydrates and sugar, they're highly addictive. And when you give something up, that's like, I'm craving a cup of coffee right now, but I know that it's not what my body actually needs. I know it's just my addiction speaking.
How do you determine one versus the other?
Just research, doing your research. Like, I've done so much research on the human body and anatomy and how we metabolize different foods and the mechanisms, and like carbohydrates, they cause an insulin spike and then they get stored away as fat, and then you get hungry again, and then it causes you to want more of that because your body isn't actually using it. It's just getting stored away, and it's just a vicious cycle.
There's so much I could say to that. I mean, I totally agree with you. It's ridiculous. I mean, the addiction rate for sugar is higher than cocaine and heroin, which are pretty big heavy hitters. So I think that's absolutely real. And the other thing I would say is that I feel that ask yourself the emotional response to when you're looking for food. You know, so my wife and I had a really long day. I had a really long night, and I ate an entire chicken. And it was fantastic, by the way. Peruvian chicken. But I wasn't hungry for chicken. I didn't have a taste for chicken. I just needed fuel, right? Like my body felt like, hey, you've been running, like, fill me up. And it didn't matter whether I had chicken or if I was going to have a chuck roast. Like, I just needed fuel. When I look at the times that I'm stressed out or I had an emotionally impactful day, I will have a very specific craving. Like, I want Nestle Toll House double chocolate chip cookie with a glass of Yoo-hoo. Like, that is not my body saying, hey, I know that I want Yoo-hoo and a double chocolate chip cookie. Like, right. I feel like that's one of those things that has allowed me to kind of get the idea and understanding of what's emotionally being pushed and what's fuel being pushed. And I feel like that's the biggest thing that I think I have learned as I continue to unpack my emotional response to food and keep that issue at bay, because it's not something that I feel like I'm free from. It's still something that I'm free from in the sense that I only eat something with a face. So like, that works out. But I mean, free from it in the sense that, like, it's still something that if something stressful happens or impacts, I could still say, yes, I'm going to make a cheesecake and it's going to be amazing. And it will be, but I don't need to eat it. So now I guess my next question to you is, like, your Instagram, you're 6 months in, obviously everything that you've said has been super impactful. But you're sharing your story with everyone else. Why is that?
I want to live by example, I guess, because it's hard. You know, I've tried talking to people about the way that I eat and this whole lifestyle, and some people get it. Some people are really curious and ask questions, and other people are like, you're crazy. And I just thought, you know, I'm gonna just live by example, and anybody who has questions or wants to talk about it, they can just come to me. And I also wanted to show that, you know, this is healthy. Like, this is a healthy way to eat, actually. And, like, look at me, look at what I've been through and my story. and how much it's helped me, like it can be you too.
So what I heard you say was your life has been so greatly impacted by making this change in transition that you want to be able to help people make this change in transition as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I know that you're probably like, why in the world did you ask me that? My reasoning for that is I feel like sometimes, especially, you know, as you continue to get more popular and grow, I'm sure there'll be an avenue for you to be able to continue with this, whether that be in, you know, having guest appearances, being on podcasts like this one, maybe writing a book. I don't know. I sometimes think that people get lost in the, oh, they charge money for something. They must not want to help. And that's not it. But eventually, like, you do have to realize that time is not free. So I think that's absolutely awesome. Anything that Brittany or I can do to help encourage and share your story with you, I'm like, we're all for it. I think that that's awesome. And I feel like there's other people that are, you know, it's like, January is right around the corner, as I've mentioned now a couple times, and people are going to be looking to make a change. What do you say to those people that are listening that are kind of like, I don't know if I want to go this direction, but maybe? What would you say to kind of push them over the fence?
I would say do your research, do a lot of reading, and make sure you know why you're doing it. Like, it's not going to be something that everybody needs to do. It's not going to be something that is sustainable for everybody, and that's fine. Like, I just think people need to understand that eating meat is healthy and humans need it. And if you're struggling with your health in any way and you're not eating a lot of meat or a lot of animal fat, and maybe you're eating a lot of fiber and you're not feeling great, you know, maybe do some research and look into it and ask questions. Question the narrative.
What were some of the resources that you found to be the most helpful when you were doing all your research?
There's some websites that are great. Zero Carb Zen is a good one. And they actually list a lot of resources on their website too. Sean Baker, Michaela Peterson, who else? Nina Teicholz, I read her book. Read a lot of books. Primal Body, Primal Mind by Nora Gedgaudas. That's a good book. That one pushes more keto, not so much carnivore, but all of the basic principles are in there.
Okay, so here's a question. I thought about this when I was driving earlier today, because there seems to be this huge, everyone's got to have a category, right? Like, I'm this, I'm that. Why do you think there's this huge differentiating factor between keto and carnivore? Because those that are carnivorous are still producing and utilizing ketones, whether they test them or not, it's a whole nother story. But so why do you think that is, out of curiosity? And that's, I mean, I know it's a loaded question, but just throwing it out there for thoughts.
Like, why is there a distinction?
Yeah.
I don't really know. I think it's just because, you know, as carnivores, we tend to eat a lot more protein, and a lot of people who are keto are afraid of that.
Cool. So let's throw this out there right now. For everyone that's listening that's keto, listening to the Keto Matrix podcast, if you are afraid of protein, stop, because it's foolish, period. Yeah. I love that. Like, yeah. I just Brittany will tell you when I...
That's a whole other podcast that you don't have time to do right now. I'm just throwing it out there, so...
I will keep this very concise.
Okay. But,
you're very nice, Meek, and I think that you present things in a very nice way where you don't push anyone, which is great. I'm not so much. I like to push people. So I feel like I've been pushing for so long, and there's finally other people that are catching up, and even others that have been in the keto space for a lot longer than I have been. However, it's just the truth is the truth. And so I am carnivorous, but I am keto. And I will manipulate my protein and fat intake in order to get whatever I need out of my body from a performance standpoint. But I think that there, not that I want to like have people come together and sing Kumbaya, but I'd like people to recognize that carnivore keto is really one and the same. I am totally against all types of vegetables in any way, shape or form. And so, you know, just understanding that, I feel like that should be freeing for people. My last question for you, I'm lying. I can't even say that with a straight face because I don't know if it's my last or not, but when you remove the fiber, right, and you stopped eating because you went carnivore, You said it took a couple weeks and you started feeling regular again and all of those things. Have you had any type of cramp or distension or issues like that since removing the fiber? Because I know there's some people that they hold on the fiber like it's the best thing on earth. And it's just even like keto people. What are your thoughts on that? And how have you felt? What's your experience been?
Like, yeah, here and there, but only when I eat something weird. Like if I eat like a sausage that has some like herbs and spices in it, or maybe some fillers that I don't know about. Like pork doesn't really seem to agree with me if I have too much of it. Honestly, it's just like too much of any plant source and my body just goes haywire.
So what do you typically eat the most of?
Beef. I have beef. I try to have it every meal, at least every day, because I'll start to get tired if I don't have it, I've noticed. It just makes me feel amazing.
It's what's for dinner. That's what I heard.
I have a chuck roast on the stove right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So, you know, what's funny is, so Danny Vega, I don't know if you follow Danny Vega, he's keto mm-hmm. counterculture on IG, but, I was talking to him once and he was telling me that he gets super tired if he eats like too much pork belly. Like it makes him tired, yeah. Which I don't want to say I find it odd. Right. But I love pork, man. I love pork, but yeah. I don't know that I've ever eaten so much of it at one time to see. I've done an entire month of just steaks. I don't know that I could do an entire month of just pork, but maybe I will, just to kind of experiment and see how it makes me feel.
I don't know. People seem to respond to pork really differently. Like some people can't do it at all, and some people eat it for every meal, just like I would beef. And they do great. But I have read some stuff about pork and how it might be kind of weird for humans. And I've heard that it's like really close to human flesh. And that's one reason why it might be weird for us. But I don't know.
It might be my anger issues. Maybe I eat too much pork.
Maybe.
Hey, that might be it. Have you had any like wild game? Boar, venison, buffalo, elk, anything like that?
I have in the past. I don't really eat a lot of it now.
Okay. That's another thing I'm pushing myself to like do, is to like start incorporating more larger muscular animals that are different than like just beef. And I mean, I typically eat beef, chicken, some fish and pork. And I don't do like organ meats or anything like that, but I want to start doing like more wild animals, just other animals, just to see what it's like. So
kangaroo is delicious. Just saying. Very lean though, so it's not great for the keto world, but it is good. Just saying.
Kangaroo. I should
try it. At least in burger form. I've heard the steak's really good. I didn't have one yet, but it's on the to-do list at some point in life.
I mean, we start with the Australian, we end with the Australian. I love it. It's great.
Right.
Meekin, where can everyone find you?
I'm on Instagram as carnivore_babe. You can find me there.
Okay, cool. Do you have anything coming up that you want people to be aware of or know about? Like for 2019 or anything that you're doing specifically that people should be like looking in and leaning in on?
Yeah, so I decided that for January, I'm going to commit to 30 days of beef, salt, and water only, because I have not yet done that. And yeah. I mean, I'm saying it's 30 days. Could be more. We'll see.
Okay. Hold on. Beef, salt, water only.
Yes.
So no butter?
No butter. No eggs.
Ghee, no eggs, no, mm-mm. I'm assuming you're going to grill a lot of beef. Like, how are you going to make beef with no fat added? Well, I guess you can just get really fatty beef.
Yeah, I always eat fatty cuts like ribeyes and chuck roast. Like I have to eat a large amount of fat. I don't do well with just lean meat. But tallow, I'll cook things in tallow. Okay, cool.
So tallow is still game in.
Yeah, and I make my own bone broth with, you know, marrow bone. So I'll do that. Yeah, not really that worried about getting fat.
Wow. All right, cool. Beef, salt, and water only.
Mm-hmm.
No pepper. I'm gonna lean in on that one, because I will say one of the things that I feel like I should adjust is the amount of seasonings I use to make certain things, because I love the flavor profiles and the layers. But I'm interested. Okay, so is that gonna start January 1st?
January 1st, yes.
Okay, what made you want to do that? Just the fact that you haven't done it yet?
Well, I just gave up coffee, like, you know, to try and figure out like the last of my skin problems, because I seem to I seem to just, I sometimes feel like I'm another Michaela Peterson and that I'm just allergic to everything. Because the few times that I have tried adding in various things, like I made a post a while ago where I said I had added in like almond milk. I tried different herbs and spices like mustard, different things, just kind of being more lax with it. And then a couple weeks later, my skin broke out like really badly, like super bad, like before I was carnivore. And I was like, okay, we need to like reel this in again and really figure out, like, I'm clearly very sensitive to plants in general, and I need to just focus on healing my gut before I try to add anything back in. And so cut out the coffee this month. Next month I'm going to be strict, be salt water only, and take it from there.
Cool. I love it. We're going to have you back on if you'd be so kind as to come back on and update everyone on how that went, as well as the rest of your journey. I think that we just, this episode is not out yet, but we have an episode we recorded with Allie Miller. And we talk about some of the panels and nutritional things that she'll run that you can get from her website. So I would definitely say check that out. That episode will be out this coming week. And then I just think of, you know, all the other people that have had sensitivities to certain things because they've eaten it a ton, and they've had to like take it out for a period of time to allow their body to heal and then reintroduce it later. So I'm totally interested to see how that goes, and we will be following to look for updates on the beef, salt, and water only for January. Brittany, do you have anything else?
I don't. I'm good.
I think I did. Look, we're 5 minutes over, so I think I did well and not going too crazy.
Your timing is slightly thrown off by your lack of sleep, but it's good. Overall, you did well, yes.
All right, well.
I mean, I can almost never just tell you, oh yeah, good job. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, family problems. Meekin, thank you so much for taking the time out, sharing your story, and continuing to help those that are interested in, you know, improving the way that they live. We will be interested to see how things progress with you. And like I said, the invitation is open. We cannot wait to have you back on and get an update on everything. If we can do anything to help, please let us know. I will make sure that the books that you referenced, as well as your Instagram and things, are located in the show notes so that listeners can find them. If there's anything else between now and 2 weeks from now that you'd like to have added, please reach out and let us know. Thank you so much. Seriously, it's been awesome.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Keto Matrix Podcast, where myths are busted, science is explained, and the keto lifestyle is discussed by industry experts and everyday people alike. For more information and support, go to theketomatrix.com.